They will put it out. They will put it out. 6:38 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Escambia County Fire Rescue, Escambia County Emergency Management, Escambia County Medical Services, all of these and the lifeguards on the beach are domains within the fiefdom, the kingdom, the monarchy. I don't know. That is run by Eric Gilmore, the Director of Public Safety in Escambia County. And by everyone's account, very well run. Eric, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Andrew, thanks for having me, sir.
You're welcome. All right. I want to get to the lifeguards and I want to get to EMS, but I did want to take at least a second and talk about how your agencies have had an extraordinarily boring month of January. I mean, you only had a tornado and a straight line winds, I think both. You had, Snowmageddon, and my God, the number of structure fires that we have had. I mean, the big news was the big, the boat warehouse or whatever, but I was just looking at the most recent director's report for your agency and structure fire on Mallory, structure fire on North Pint, structure fire on Rambler, on Bruce Street. I'm like loads of structure fires, unfortunately, in the month of January. I don't know where you want to start, but man, your organizations have been pretty busy, unfortunately.
We have. January was pretty busy, but let's start with structure fires and we'll work our way back.
Right.
So yeah, we have had a increase in structure fires. Unfortunately, it's due to inappropriate heating sources. We did have that snap of cold weather, and during that cold weather, inappropriate wiring of electricity and heating sources, inappropriate heating sources. But then we had that warming up a little bit, and then, of course, the structure fires kind of tapered off. But anytime it gets cold, people take chances with heating sources to try to stay warm, and we try to warn against that. Don't do that. And then we had the boat fire this past week. That was State Fire Marshal still investigating on what the actual cause was of that. And when you add a bunch of boats, a bunch of high-dollar boats that hold a lot of fuel, and, every one of them's empty, right? So, fuel, oil, and then fiberglass on top of it that burns hot and fast, it just makes a mess. And we had an outstanding response on that. And our mutual aid partners in City of Pensacola and Gulf Coast Services, appreciate them coming in, helping us out. And trying to get that fire under control. So
I mean, that was 10. What was it? 10 of your apparatus plus a bunch of others. I mean, I know this is maybe not the perfect comparison, but it kind of reminded me of how like every law enforcement agency in the local universe responded to the NAS Pensacola attack. That was kind of like the response to this massive warehouse fire, right? Just everybody came.
That's absolutely correct. It was all hands on deck on that one because it took a lot of manpower because you've got a potential collapse, so you can't really go in and attack the fire like we do aggressively.
You have to do a
defensive attack. So, and then when you get collapse on the metal, you've got to pull all that off to get to the source of the fire. It exacerbates the scene a little bit more versus just the residential. And on top of that, while we had all those units there,
can I pause you for a second? Because I had not been thinking about this, and I'm so glad you mentioned it because it is.
Yeah.
So you can't go in because the roof can collapse. And also, you've got, let's say, boats, fiberglass, and oil, and fuel burning. And then when the structure starts to collapse on those, you have metal covering the source of the fire itself, which unfortunately doesn't extinguish it, or not fully. And so you have that additional challenge of even fighting the source of the fire. Did I hear you right? Am I thinking about this the right way?
You are absolutely thinking about it the correct way. It inhibits us from getting in there to the source of the fire. It was a red iron building with sheet metal skin, and it had to get really hot to warp that red iron and drop the ceiling on the boats and everything in there.
Wow.
So yeah, it does. Things like that really inhibit us from actually getting in there to the source of the fire and doing a quick knockdown on it. So.
And you had a tornado and a snowstorm.
Yeah, we had the tornado, the anomaly that happened last week. Dispatch called me, and we weren't supposed to have the inclement weather until the next day.
Right.
And they said, we're getting calls of a tornado in Ellison. And I said, guys, I don't have time for this. Quit playing around. And they,
right.
I hear a caller in the background. And sure enough, so I called up Travis and I called Scotland. I called Scotland. I said, Scotland, what are you seeing on radar in Scotland? Thinks I'm playing with her, our meteorologist. And she goes, there. And she calls Mobile Weather, and they're going, Scotland, we're not seeing anything. And sure enough, we get out there and take the pictures and send in the Mobile Weather. And everybody's like, okay, something happened here. So we had a good response on that. We had a lot of units there making sure we did damage assessment, make sure everybody was accounted for. Had a lot of EMS resources there to make sure we took care of any potential patients, which we did. We had three. We transported two to the hospital. due to debris, being hit by debris, and then one was treated on scene and refused. So
yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I figured it'd be a zero at best, if anything, and it turns out to be a Category 1, which is, you know, wild.
I thought that too. I thought it'd be EF0, and it turned out to be EF1. So yes.
And then you had the snowstorm, from which everybody mostly had fun, including I saw the video of the fire truck driving through the snow in Perdido Key, which is kind of entertaining. again, it's a learning experience, and, you know, you grow from there. All right, so I want to get to the lifeguard thing because that's been the news of the day. Gulf Islands National Seashore says they don't have the money to pay you guys to contract with you to provide lifeguards at Johnson Beach and Fort Pickens. That seems like a big deal, but you tell me.
So, historically, back in the day, Gulf Islands hired their own lifeguards, and they did their own thing, and we did our own thing. So, we handled Pensacola Beach and all the and Whitewater Beach and those areas like that. Then they was having issues getting lifeguards themselves. They said, look, you guys do this. You're in the business. Let's just contract with you, and you throw your manpower out there. I was like, great. We'll form a partnership and do that. So, this year, they don't have the money to put lifeguards on Johnson's Beach. Henderson, Opal, Langdon, those areas that the Gulf Islands National Seashore is in charge of.
Langdon is Fort Pickens over the wall, and Opal is down the way in the Gulf Islands between Navarre and Pensacola Beach, right?
That's correct.
Okay, go on.
So this year we will not have our lifeguards at Gulf Islands because they pay for our manpower. It's an extra cost on me if I had to put lifeguards out there, and what our budget for the county includes is Casino Beach, Whitewater Beach, and we've now included Perdido Key. So we will be out there at those locations that we typically cover in the that the county's responsible for. So we will be, as we are like clockwork, out there doing those things at those locations. But there will not be lifeguards represented at the Gulf Islands National Seashore or any of their parks this year.
Is it something, I know I did not see it on the commission agenda for today, but are you guys trying to seek the county to provide guards? Because even though it's you know, federal land, it's still kind of our territory. You know, we think of it that way. And I know having them in Perdido means that they're closer than they ever would have been before, but that's a long way from, you know, the station or the tower on county property out to the Johnson's Beach area. Same thing for Fort Pickens. You know, it's one thing to be at Casino Beach. It's another thing entirely to get all the way out to Langdon. Are you guys going to are you seeking to have funding appropriated from the county to provide that coverage, or have you even had that conversation yet?
We have not had that conversation yet. We just found out Tuesday that this was taking place. Okay. So, you know, we're trying to gather our thoughts and figure out how this is going to impact us. Because last year, Johnson's Beach has a lot of people on it. There's a lot of people who are at Johnson's Beach, and it, to be unprotected is kind of concerning.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, we do have our guys at Perdido Key now. They're at Beach Access, too. While it is far away, it's closer than it would have been if we hadn't had Perdido Key stood up.
Definitely.
So, you know, I'll get with Dave Greenwood, I'll get with AJ and Jake, and we'll sit down and talk about it and see if we need to beef that up a little bit more just in anticipation or go from there. But we have not had that conversation yet if the county is wanting to actually put lifeguards out there. So we'll work through that and see how that
And by the way, I'll give an after-the-fact kudos to, you know, I sort of said some criticism about Jeff Bergosh for not really having a plan to put lifeguards out there, even though he called for it and the funding and staffing for all that. But look, it turns out in after the fact that having them out there gives this collateral benefit. So, you know, give the credit in that regard. Hey, what is the price tag on the Gulf Islands contract for the lifeguards? Do you know roughly?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I think we threw like $300,000, or they would put $300,000 in the PO account.
Okay.
And all we would do is if we put a lifeguard out there, then we would just submit their time card for payment to go file. I guess that PO is what we did.
Okay, so maybe $500,000 at most or somewhere in that vicinity, right? I mean, just ballpark
somewhere,
stuff.
If I had to estimate, somewhere in that vicinity.
So I have an idea, only because it happens to be top of mind for me right now. I don't know if this is within the statute or not, but what about TDC money? I mean, it's clearly tourism and safety related. I don't know if it's eligible under the statute, but that might be something you guys could look at to, you know, provide for that while it's not. I don't know, just a thought. It just occurs to me as we're talking.
No, so
one of the things I wanted to talk with you about is EMS. I know you guys are, offering a $10,000 bonus. You're trying to get more people to come in. You're doing a lot of things to try to. We've bought some apparatus. We're trying to figure out staffing. I have a completely different kind of question that I want to ask you. You and I have talked many times over the years about you know, held calls, holding the wall at the hospitals, how, gosh, it's been a year now since we don't report held calls anymore, in the, at least the report that I see. Here's my request, though. I know you guys are always trying to make improvements, and you're dealing with a wide variety of factors. We've talked about this many times. What I would like to see as a citizen is I'd like to see a report that says, okay, during these day parts, what was the average response time? And by average, I mean the midpoint one is the one I think would be the key, not necessarily the mean, because that might have outliers built into it, but the midpoint average response time for, you know, EMS across the county. And then what was the longest response time for that time period? And just give me that data so that we can really see, well, are we out of line with national standards or are we in line with national standards? And then how does it improve over time? I know, you know, maybe you have to do it for deltas and echoes, like the high urgency calls. And that's fine, too, if that's what it is. Maybe just response time averages for deltas and echoes instead of all calls. But it seems like creating some baseline informational chart like that would help us know how bad is it and how much is it getting better. What do you think?
No, we can look into that. That's no problem. We got Chief Watts. We hired him back in the fall, and he's done some fantastic things, done some good things of upgrading our EMS system.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at in March. He's doing a differential shift, so everybody had to do a shift bid. So he's looking at trying to get more trucks on during the peak time, so it could influence those times. So we'd have to run with the new shift or the new schedule to see if we are hitting the mark and getting more trucks on during the higher peak hours. So he's doing additional mid shifts. So he's doing a lot of neat things. And like I said, we got to try something. If we just sit there and stagnate and expect a different result, that's what the definition of insanity, right? So
right.
He is doing some things, some shift changes, shift scheduling, to make sure we're trying to meet the peak demand. So, after we get some data under that, we're definitely going to be looking at that to see if we're meeting the mark now or getting better and improving. So, down the road, yes, we can absolutely do that.
Well, and that's, honestly, I want it as soon as possible because that would show us where we're at and then where we get to if we make improvements. You know, that would be the ideal. And honestly, I don't really care about the alphas and the bravos because the low acuity calls, if they have to wait an hour, that doesn't bother me. But the deltas and the echoes are the ones I really want to know about. And, you know, so if we can, because this would help you guys too, because I know a lot of times, like what you see on social media is, well, they're holding calls again. And you're like, well, that doesn't tell the whole story. Exactly. This would be a way to tell the accurate, significant story, I think, unless I'm missing something, in a way that would be able to respond to, well, yeah, we're holding calls, but they were alphas because here's the average response times for the D's and E's. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can get with Chief Watts. We had a discussion about that this morning.
Okay, awesome.
Absolutely. We can do that. So
excellent. Well, I keep thinking about how frustrating it is to have not great information and how can we make it more informative so that we can all as citizens have better confidence in the system and the improvements that are being made. Last thing I wanted to talk about with you was the cold weather shelters are open though, right? Just a quick note for people that might need to know that information.
Absolutely. They are open. So they'll be open during the duration of the cold weather event. So anybody needs a shelter, you know, Waterfront Mission, my father's vineyard, and I know I'm going to forget some of the other ones, but they're out there for sheltering while we're in this cold weather snap. Absolutely.
Today and tonight and today and all that. Okay, good. Last thing is, and we just don't talk about this enough, but what I think has been a raging success is the CORE program for remediating opioid addiction. Where are we at today?
So those guys have been knocking down the park. They've been very aggressive. We have a small staff that does that, and unfortunately, we would love to take on more fake clients, but it takes so much to deal with somebody going through opioid crisis. So we, since 2023, April 2023 is when the inception of the program started. I believe, I can't remember the exact number, I know we're over 250 people that we have taken in our program and transitioned them into a better acuity to get them completely off their addiction. And that is a 87% success rate, which is phenomenal for
That's
the national
amazing.
Average.
Yeah.
So those men and women in the CORE program are doing a phenomenal job. The hospitals are doing a good job helping us out, identifying people and getting them signed up in the program. And then our transitional partner, you know, Community Health in Northwest Florida, those guys do a great job of after we get done with the initial initiation into the program and transitioning to them for long-term care. Have done a good job to keep them off the addiction so that we don't have a repeat or a relapse. Now, we do have those onesies or twosies. We get relapses or somebody falls out of the program and we can't find them. That does happen, unfortunately. But the staff we have is very aggressive in trying to find them and find out what's going on and make sure that they get back into the program. Or, you know, sometimes they just get out of it and they don't want the help. But you got to want the help first to be successful.
No, so, I think it's a great success program. Yeah, getting somebody who calls you for an overdose, you put them on a truck, take them to a hospital, and then try to get them off drugs entirely. If you got 85%, I mean, if you had a 10% success rate and you got 10 people or 20 people or 30 people to stop using opioids and stop putting stress on the EMS system and harming themselves,
yeah.
I mean, it'd be great. But to have, you know, approaching 200 is amazing, a fantastic program. And I look forward to seeing other communities adopt the same program.
Absolutely. So we're working with some of the other counties in the Panhandle. Walton County's been over to see how we do our program, and several of the counties out of South Florida, because we've had such a good success rate. So it's those men and women in that program are very compassionate, very wanting to make a difference in the community, and you've got to have that, and we do have that. So we're very fortunate to start that core program and get that going.
Yeah, and also it's a chance for, because so much of the time in public safety, it's respond to the crisis. This is actually to solve the problem. And, God, I love that for the folks who are working on it, that they get that kind of real, you know, moral civic success kind of feeling. Eric Gilmore is the director of public safety in Escambia County. He and I both talk fast, and when we're together, we accelerate. Eric, as always, thank you for the time, and thank you for what you're doing. Please pass along to your folks how much we appreciate everything they do. We'll talk to you again soon.
I will absolutely do that, Andrew. Thank you very much. Appreciate you, sir.